Welcome to the Zen Founder Podcast. I'm Rob, the founder.
And I'm Sherry, the clinical psychologist. And we've come together to help founders and their families stay sane while starting up.
Each week, we'll talk about different ways to work well, stay emotionally and physically healthy, and stay connected to the people that you care about.
You all haven't heard from us for a while. We've spent the summer doing a series on founder origin stories, which I hope people have had the chance to hear. I think they're just incredibly fascinating stories with really cool people.
Yeah, I was blown away by them. You did all the interviews at MicroConf back in April, and then I had not heard them until I listened to them to do the intros and outros. And interview after interview, I was struck by just the similarities, some of the differences. I was also struck by how I know all of the people you interviewed, some of them really well, some of whom I'd heard their stories before, but there were new elements that were pulled out of it based on your questions and based on someone just really sitting down to give it time to think through. What I thought was pretty cool is Steli Efti and Heaton Shaw, two of the guys who we interviewed for this series, in the meantime started their own podcast called The Startup Chat. That's at thestartupchat.com. And episode 15 of that show is called Entrepreneurial Origin Stories. And they specifically talked about how being interviewed here on Zen Founder, how impactful it was for each of them to do it, and then to listen to the other's origin story. And then they talked about how much they learned from being interviewed about it, and how it kind of shapes who they are and why it is important. I mean, kind of the same thing we said back in episode 20 of this show, why it's so important to know your origin because of how it impacts how you approach situations and kind of your ingrained thinking.
One thing that I thought was cool about their show is that both of them are pretty self-reflective and they do lots of interviews. So they've talked about their lives a lot, but there's something about coming back to your origin story at different points in your development as an adult, as an entrepreneur, that new themes become relevant or important. And so it was cool to hear how like really important it was for them, even though it was something they'd sort of done before. Like they've thought about childhood, they've talked about different things, but at this point in their particular development, it had new meaning because of who they are and where they are now. So we thought we would spend this episode just recapping some of the themes that we heard and things that we found interesting in those interviews. And again, if you haven't listened to these interviews, this might sound a little bit weird without the context of the longer interview. So I absolutely recommend that you take the time to go back and listen to them because I think they're really, really good and really interesting. But today we thought we would spend some time just going over what stood out to us, especially as we think about the interviews as a group. We started the summer asking the question, where does a founder come from? What kinds of things happen in someone's life to help lead them toward the path of entrepreneurship? And I think these interviews give some interesting data towards answering that question.
All right. So if you haven't listened to them, I'd recommend going back to episode 20, which is where Sherry and I spent 30 minutes talking about the importance of knowing yourself and the importance of kind of reflecting on your own story. And then 21 through 25 were the founder origin stories. And we actually kicked off with Heaton Shaw's origin. And I was surprised to find out that, well, A, he is self-reflective. You're right. And he was super in touch with, I think, a lot of elements of his childhood. And he was willing to just kind of talk frankly about it, which I really appreciated. I mean, that kind of makes the best type of story is if you're not trying to, you're not afraid of saying something. You're not trying to hide anything.
Oh, that's so refreshing about Heaton. There were things that I wanted to ask him a lot about, like the death of his mom, that are very sensitive topics. And I kept saying, if it's okay, if I can ask you or if I can inquire more. And he was always, absolutely, yes, ask whatever you want, which is so Heaton. I mean, it's such a, that in itself is sort of this reflection of this fearless, I'm not afraid to look at anything or talk about anything kind of approach to life, which I thought is very interesting.
Yep. And that, I mean, that was the first thing that struck me with his interview was his openness, number one, and then the loss of his mom when he was 7 years old, I think. And the relationship, the strength of the relationship he had with his dad, that his dad obviously was incredibly supporting during this life-changing, this life-altering event that's happening. And his dad is basically there to usher him through it and to kind of be a partner and be someone who's like super supportive of him.
The only thing that Heaton didn't elaborate much on that left me a little bit curious. And obviously we all have our private stories and skeletons that we want to keep in the closet. But he talked about or alluded to the fact that he got in a lot of trouble as a young man.
You wonder to what extent that trouble was.
Right. Indicated that it was pretty bad.
Right.
And that it was trouble that maybe would have been very, very hard to bounce back from or get yourself out of.
Right.
And I think part of that trouble or part of some of what was going on with him is this testing the boundaries of things. How much can I get away with? How far can I push this? And he had a lot of freedom growing up as a child. And he tells a story about his dad taking him to the hospital where his dad worked and sort of setting him loose in the computer room and saying like, well, experiment, explore, take things apart, see how things work. And so a lot of freedom, and it sounds like it was sort of up to Heaton to learn the boundaries of things and to learn how to regulate his decisions so that bad things didn't happen, rather than having a lot of structure externally imposed on him.
Yeah, that was a big thing I took away. The other four founders that we spoke with had scripts imposed upon them. And what I mean by that is like a framework of how you should live your life. You should go to school and then get good grades and then pass tests and then go to college and then get a good job. And that's a pretty deep pattern. It's not necessarily that script that each of them was given, but each of them was kind of their family or the folks they were around were kind of pushing them in a direction. And most of them fought against it. And as we talk through the others in this episode, you know, I'll point out where they fought against their script. I didn't feel like Heaton had much of a script kind of foisted on him or forced upon him. And so that was interesting that he was given more freedom and still wound up finding entrepreneurship as a path.
I think part of that open script too is that Heaton, like Stelly and like Reuben, lived between cultures. Like Heaton was born to nationally Indian parents who were living in Africa, who moved to the US. So he had like multiple cultures influencing him as he was growing up. And so there's this sort of natural tension between these different cultural scripts that I think families work out in different ways.
Right. And that, remember, Reuben said the same thing, that he didn't consider he was an American, even though he lived here. But he said he didn't start speaking English till he was 10. He was going to public school in, I forget if it was Florida at the time, but he basically said, I didn't consider myself American until I was like a teenager. And then Stelly also essentially immigrated to the U.S. So there's something about that element of it that I'm intrigued by. There's parallels there, right? Of living between cultures and trying to, I guess, figure out how to navigate the duality of that.
Well, Stelly is from a Greek family that lived in Germany. So Stelly grew up in Germany, but grew up as an immigrant family from Greece. And then I think didn't move to the States until he was an adult.
That's right.
But I think those factors and the way that they shape how people organize their lives are really interesting, because we are so shaped by our cultures and the expectations and the messages that we get from our families. And when children are being brought up in families where there are many different kinds of messages, where maybe the messages from the family about what's expected and what you're supposed to do with your life are different than the culture that's around you, there's this shifting and kind of necessary redefinition that happens. Again, I don't know the stats on this, but there's a lot of entrepreneurs that come from tri-culture, bi-culture families where there are lots of kind of meshing of ideas. Yeah. And I think that contributes to this willingness to write your own script.
That brings up another point. You know, with each of the talks I have in this outline that we're talking about today, I have the motivation of the person, like what I pulled out as their motivation for becoming a founder and for flipping the script and just deciding to take their own path. But Heaton's, I had a tough time pinpointing that. Did you get a strong sense of why he started his own companies and kind of dove into entrepreneurship? Even though he wasn't imposed with like either an entrepreneurship script or even a constraining script like a lot of the other interviewees.
I think Heaton has a lot of relational motivation. Like he really, I think, wanted to do well by his father. He wanted to make his dad proud and happy. And I also think Heaton really wanted to pursue family and have relationships. So the fact that he ended up in entrepreneurship seems like irrelevant, really. Like he could have been a doctor. He could have been lots of different things. But his kind of driving motivation for his life was relationally oriented.
Right. That makes sense. I also think just based on his personality and intelligence that he would have had a hard time going somewhere and just working for people. I use the phrase unemployable for myself, but I would consider probably most people on who we interviewed and most people we meet around the microconf tables, so to speak, have some element of that.
They're like benevolently deviant.
Yeah.
Like it's not bad deviant,
that's
but
right.
they're deviant. They don't quite fall in the middle of that bell curve.
Right. Right. And aren't willing to kind of go somewhere. I mean, it killed me when I was working salary jobs and I was working for people who I considered to be making bad choices when we moved too slow, people who were not very smart, but based on my judgment. And that was, I think, what all of us who want to be founders tend to feel. And the ones who are successful, I think, tend to have a certain element of kind of wanting to get away from that and having some ambition and having enough raw intelligence to be able to kind of push through it. And I think that plays into, I think, why Heaton didn't just go and, because he could have been successful, whatever, you know, doing, like you said, being a surgeon or doing SEO, being a consultant, being any of these things. But I think he kind of followed this path because he was naturally inclined towards it.
And some technology was available to him to play with.
That was a big thing. And that was an element. So that wove through each of these stories, right? It's like Eric Douglas at an early age started playing with computers. Patrick McKenzie, when he was 7, started writing software on paper. And Ruben was exposed to it not until what
not
it was
until
like
he was a young adult.
Yeah, it was after high school, right? But for him, it was the motivation was a little bit different. But each of the folks we interviewed, and I'm included in this, right? When I was 8 years old, my parents got me an Apple IIe, and I dove into it and loved doing it for the sake of doing it. And then later on realized, oh, this is actually a super lucrative career. And I enjoyed doing it as a hobby. Anyways, I would do this if no one paid me. And I get the feeling that a lot of folks on this list or a lot of folks we interviewed could say the same.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so let's talk a little bit about Erica Douglas. I didn't know so much of what she said. I mean, Erica and I have known each other for a few years, but I didn't know her backstory like this. She talked about being highly gifted and probably having ADHD. She said she was diagnosed with ADHD as an adult, and it was kind of obvious. She said she put the H in ADHD is the expression she used. So obviously had struggles fitting in, right? Because you're advanced in intelligence and kind of struggling socially because of the ADHD and because you're thinking on a plane that is so different than everyone around you, right? All the other kids your age.
Your brain is functioning really differently than everyone else's or than the adults expect it to.
Exactly.
In both good and sometimes problematic ways.
Right, right. Folks think that because you are gifted that you should know the rules and follow them, right? If you're smart, then you know the rules and follow them, but that's not how it works. And it sounds like it caused her some issues early on. It sounded like her mom had to fight pretty hard to get her some advanced education, right? She was in first grade and reading at some ridiculous, you know, 7 grades above or something. And her mom really had to fight to get her to go into the 3rd grade class during reading. And
yeah.
To kind of prove stuff. And this is not an uncommon story, I think, with kids who are functioning that far above their grade level. And then she had some early entrepreneurial experience, which is cool. And she did them with her dad, which I kind of enjoyed hearing about. She collected golf balls and sold them on golf ranges. So there was something early on for her, whether it was the money or whether it was the fun of it. There was something entrepreneurial in her really early on, I think more than any of the other folks we interviewed. Because you didn't hear Ruben doing a lemonade stand when he was 7 or 8, right? And Heaton didn't mention that. But
well, Ruben was doing something, but yeah, it wasn't lemonade.
That's true. It was entrepreneurial, but it was involved something else.
We'll let that lie.
Yeah.
I love the story about Erica where she like rewires her parents.
Oh, yeah.
Like all of their sound system equipment.
And diagrammed it.
And diagrams it. Yep. And is basically like, this is inefficient. I can fix this. And sort of systematically goes through and puts everything in a different place. That's a just wonderfully technical entrepreneurial practice right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's like creativity and just like giving order to a chaotic system. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that led her into computers and starting her hosting business and all that. In terms of the script, you know, we have a couple themes here, right? The script that was foisted upon her was that everyone was saying, go to college, you're gifted. And she went to a high school that was a fast track high school to college. And everyone, she said, kept telling her, you have to go to college, have to go to college. And when she essentially didn't and said she wanted to move to the Bay Area, people were really disappointed in her. And that had to be tough. And I think that's a sign of the entrepreneur in her, is that she was willing to say, no, this is the choice that I'm going to make because this is the right choice for me, even if you all don't agree with it. And that's very much of what being a founder is, I think.
I think there were lots of things in Erica's early life that made her feel like the scripts that were available didn't work well. I mean, she grew up in kind of rural Indiana, as she tells it, and to be a highly academically accelerated girl, and then to be a girl who's very hyper, those are sort of tough, mold-breaking ways of being. And Erica was also adopted, which she was made aware of early on in her life. She knew from the beginning that she had a different kind of story than most of the kids around her. So I think those were early foundational things that made her kind of realize, like, people aren't always going to understand me, and I'm going to have to make some tough decisions to make my life what I need it to be, not what other people want me to be.
And I like that she figured it out so early. Sounds like she figured it out by the time she was 16 or 17. And I figured that out when I was like 30. Right. And I remember suddenly realizing, like, oh, I don't fit this mold and this is what I need to do. And it sounds like she figured it out really early. And each of these folks, I mean, it sounds like a lot of them figured it out in their teens or their early 20s.
Yep.
You know, and that's when you see the shift happen of I'm following the same path as everyone else. And then suddenly they all deviate. I think the other thing that struck me about Erica's interview was when you dove into being a woman in tech and just the sexism and kind of the latent discrimination or just inability for some folks to deal with women in tech. And that was sobering. And I think a reminder for all of us how we're still not there yet. And there's a lot of progress to be made in terms of trying to eliminate that and trying to get to a place where there's just more quality and not so many assumptions and the microaggressions, as you brought up during the interview, against women in tech.
Yeah. And then I think about what prepared her earlier on in her life to be able to cope with that. I mean, it's still painful. It's wrong that it's happening. But she's also figured out a way to thrive in a field that is not necessarily always welcoming to her. And so some of that practice at being a different kind of kid probably helped train her to be able to be an entrepreneurial woman in technical field.
Our next interview is with Steli Efti, and his interview had a lot of parallels with Heat and Shaw's in terms of essentially living across many cultures, losing a parent at a young age, having a very strong relationship with the other parent. And it's interesting, Steli and Heaton are good friends. They've started a podcast now. I can see why, even though their personalities are different and what they're doing with their startups is they're going two different paths, but they have kind of a kinship from all this shared history, even though they've only met each other, you know, over the past year or so.
Yeah. Steli was fun to talk to. That man is a hustler in the best possible way. Like, he's just larger than life and great storyteller, pleasure to be with. And I loved his story. I loved that he had no dreams of technology, that he wanted to make money and he wanted to be successful in his life. And he had this like something to prove that made him a little bit edgy, but without being like angry. And I think that's a neat element to his story, is that there's a little bit of like defiance and rebellion in it. But what he did with that defiance and rebellion has made him successful.
That's right. His motivation was, he said it was him against the world. He was trying to prove the world wrong, that he wasn't going to fail. And you'll notice, you know, if you look at Patrick McKenzie's, he came up through the technology side of it. Erica was a tech thinker, right? I would say Heaton was exposed to computers and kind of came up through that. Steli didn't come that direction, and he's not a developer, right? He's a sales guy. But we're all still in the same startup space. You can come at it from the sales side, from the marketing side, from the tech side, but it just kind of shapes. It depends on who you are, like what your personality is. Steli is outgoing. He's an extrovert. He's very charismatic. And so it naturally fits that he wouldn't enjoy sitting around a computer 8 or 10 hours a day hacking out code. And he didn't do that his whole childhood. But his skill set is still useful. And if his end goal was to kind of be successful and to do it for the money or to prove the world wrong, then startups are still a path for that.
Mm-hmm.
Our next interview was with Patrick McKenzie.
And Patrick is the most technical of all of the folks that we interviewed. And when he was a kid, he was really became interested in video games, as many kids are. But of course, he couldn't just play them. He wanted to build them. And so he checked out this book at the library about how to build video games and then didn't have a computer, didn't have access to one. So was writing code by hand when he was 7 and writing out the logic and finding the glitches and finding the mistakes and just this incredibly like self-motivated person to be so determined to figure out how to make this work.
Yep. It reminded me of Steve Wozniak's autobiography called I Was, where he did a similar thing, but it was with logic boards and transistors. And he basically did it all on paper because he didn't have a computer. And he did it for years, kind of as a high school student in his, might even have been like 7th or 8th grade, but it was similar types of things. I have friends who did it. I did it with the Apple IIe when I would be at school and didn't have the computer around. I would write programs out on paper. And I think there's a drive for certain people to create in that respect. And I think when the computer kind of meshes with the way your mind works, it becomes a natural outpouring. And Patrick didn't say this, but we kind of ran parallel paths for some of those early years. And my memory of it is I was kind of like, finally, I can express myself in a way that it doesn't go over weird, that people don't misunderstand me. I can tell a computer to do these instructions and it just does something and I create something and it's really cool. And it's empowering to be a young kid and to have struggles in other areas and maybe to not be understood by everyone, but to suddenly find this kinship with essentially a computer.
Something that you can master.
Yep. Be and proud of.
I was really struck by Patrick's, I think I'll call it like a drive towards mastery. Like he would find or was aware of parts of himself where he was struggling, like significant anxiety and a speech impediment. And so rather than like hiding in the shadows or just coding in his basement or something, he started doing competitive debate. Like there's something in him that has this determination to master the things that are hard that is just fantastic. I mean, that is a really lovely trait that predicts a lot of success. Patrick has a lot of grit. He has a lot of determination not to let his weaknesses get the best of him. And to have that from when you are a very young child is really striking.
And the other thing that came out for me in Patrick's interview is that he was discouraged from entrepreneurship because his dad was a small business owner and they had some hard years. And so his dad basically said, go get a job at a big company and get healthcare and earn a salary and you'll be better off. And he did that. I mean, he essentially moved to Japan and got a job at a company, and he was trying to make sure that he could be employed for his whole life, right? Because he wanted to learn Japanese and be a programmer. And then there was something in him that wouldn't let him do that, and he fought that script that had been set out for him. And I think the fact that he's extremely smart, self-motivated, and I think his unhappiness with his job really just kind of pushed him to start his tiny, tiny little business, bingo card creator. And that was the way that his motivation, I think, came from, right? It was this just being smart and being unhappy with the status quo and diving into the script, probably more than the other folks that we interviewed did, right? He followed the script for a while, then realized this is just not going to work. And then kind of deviated from that slowly over time by basically launching a small app. And once it started to gain success, parlaying on that. To be honest, it's very parallel to what I did, right? I had a script laid out and I followed it for quite a while and then was so unhappy with it that I then started launching small things. But he didn't take the leap until he basically had enough income to replace his salaried income.
I think something too that's interesting about that idea of his own drive toward mastery is it would be totally consistent with his early childhood pattern to press into the thing that was hard. So if his dad sort of struggled or had some failures as an entrepreneur, I could see Patrick kind of subversively deciding that he was going to fix that, to do it better, to not let that weakness linger, but in his own life to seek to master it. And I don't know that he would ever say that, but that's my theory.
The last interview we did was with Ruben Gomez. He's the founder of BidSketch. And I had heard the majority of his story before, but it was still eye-opening to hear it. And some of the quotes that he had out of it, I loved the quote towards the end where he said, people talk about how hard this is to start a startup. It's not really that hard. And he says, I've worked way harder for $6 an hour for no money. And I've never worked less and made more money in my life I'm so happy that this, obviously I'm paraphrasing at this point, but he says that, you know, I'm so happy to have had this opportunity and I wish more people knew that it existed. That was pretty impactful for me.
Ruben's story is amazing in lots of ways, but I was just so struck with how he capitalized on opportunities. I mean, he had kind of a random conversation with someone at a company he was working with, and this man said, oh, you should go into computers. There's a lot of money in computers. And Ruben was like, really? And that conversation alone was kind of a game changer for him. And he decided, okay, well, if there's a lot of money in computers, it sure beats the hard work that I'm, like the day labor work that I'm doing. So I'll see if I can work towards that. And then he had another conversation with someone about a more entrepreneurial path. And he maximized on that too. Ruben is like very brilliant and very intelligent, but is just so capable of follow through, the slow and steady, I will work towards the goal. His work ethic is pretty amazing when you listen to all of the challenges that he's had in his life.
Yeah, I think his willingness just to press into things that he had never done before and that were so foreign to him. He said he had no role model to show him what you could do with computers or what you could do as starting a software company or any of that. But he saw it and he said, I can do that, and just figured it out.
And he also lived between cultures. Lived in both the U.S. and Mexico, lived in several different cities, didn't have a lot of consistency or stability growing up, had a father that was very, very difficult, sounds like violent and alcoholic and had a lot of trouble. So Ruben very much had to write his own script. And the scripts that were available to him were basically a lot of illegal and violent activity. And so after a few of his friends were killed when he was a young adolescent, he was looking for a new script. And it took him a while to find the script that he wanted to write for himself or to follow.
Yeah, I think he said he was a day laborer for construction for a couple of years, and that was really hard. And then he was a security guard. And then when he heard, you know, the interesting thing for motivation for him at the time, he would tell his mom, he said, I'm going to make a lot of money someday. And that was the motivation early on to do these other things, was that there was more money in it and probably hopefully less hard work, right? Being a software developer does not involve digging ditches and doing the stuff that he was doing at the time. And so that's what first led him into it. That's not his motivation. I know him pretty well. Like, that's not his motivation today, but it did show him this world and then allow him to kind of flip the scripts that he had seen and to pull him into tech and being a founder.
So if I could summarize some of the themes that I heard in all of these interviews, is I think all five of these entrepreneurs had early childhoods that had some significant adversity, but they all had high support. So those that lost a parent, the other parent was very present. Ruben had a difficult father, but his mother, he had a great, strong relationship with his mother. So they had hard things happen, but they had enough people around them to help them and love them that they weren't flooded or ruined by those experiences. I think they also were growing up in contexts where they either didn't have strong scripts or the scripts that were available didn't apply or didn't fit. And so they had a kind of an emotional, social, individual drive to kind of embrace and master or embrace that they were different and find their own kind of path to live their lives. So these are people who all have some pretty significant internal resources, whether that resource is grit, the ability to stick to something, whether it's raw intelligence, whether it's curiosity, whether it's creativity. There's something that is innate to each of these individuals that has really been a skill that they can capitalize on once they found the kind of raw material to use.
I like those. I think those three takeaways are probably the main thing that I would pull out of these interviews, right? It's high adversity with high support. The default script didn't fit or apply to them. And they had some type of raw talent. And I agree with you that that raw resource is varied from person to person. I think there is a level of intelligence that runs through them, but it's not just being smart. It's getting things done too. It's being able to execute, willing to execute. It's being able to take at least a small risk, right? A lot of them didn't take huge risks, but it was that small risk that kind of, it's the gateway risk that kind of gets you addicted to doing more risk, because when things work out, and if you just, you persevere, and whether it's your back's to the wall or you just need to do it for yourself, when you pour into something and you gain something out of it that's fulfilling, whether it's a little bit bigger of a paycheck or whether it's the satisfaction of coding up your first game, it's an invigorating feeling. And I think that that is what pulled each of these founders down their path, was investing in something and taking what seemed like a bit of a risk, but then achieving enough success early on that it's like, wow, I can do this. Like, this is, it's life-changing.
And they all have the capacity to tolerate hard things, whether it's sexism or racism, low expectations from other people, parents who don't understand and who are discouraging them. They all tolerate that. They all have had really significant discouragement or failure or lack of acceptance, and have learned how within their own social, emotional, personal psychology, they've learned how to cope with that effectively. So once again, we want to just really thank Heaton Shaw, Erica Douglas, Sally FD, Patrick McKenzie, and Ruben Gomez for taking the time to do these interviews with us. We really loved them and learned a lot and are just grateful to be able to hear and share these stories with our listeners.
Absolutely.
So thanks, guys.
Yep. Yeah, because it's no simple task to tell your origin story, right? It can be stressful, and it can, I don't know, tell it to the world in order to help others out, I think is commendable.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Founder.
We'll be back next week with another conversation about how to enjoy a little bit more Zen in your startup life.